T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special capaccio for you, right?
Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio, no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a capaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Hey, Sal's going to be at the M&T Bank branch on South Park Avenue in Hamburg today. Going to be there from noon until 2, supporting M&T Bank's Gift of Warmth Drive. They will be collecting new hats, scarves, mittens, and coats. And Thurman Thomas will be there as well. So you can meet the Bills legend, hang out with Sal, and contribute to the M&T Bank's Gift of Warmth Drive. That's, again, at their branch on South Park Avenue in Hamburg today, and that will be from noon until 2. Sal is joining us right now on the Western Hotline, brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Good morning, Sal. Happy Football Friday.
You as well. Thank you.
Let's do the injury report. Get that done first and foremost, because a couple names cropped up yesterday. The injury report is brought to you by Univera Healthcare. Compare because you care at univeraforbusiness.com.
Yeah, Quentin Spain, starting guard, and backup running back TJ Yeldon, both were out of yesterday's practice with illnesses. So, you know, we'll get we don't know the extent of that, so we'll know today once we get out of practice and, you know, see where what their situation is. A couple rest days as normal for Thursday, Lorenzo Alexander and Frank Gore. And then Ty Inseki has still not practiced with the ankle, but Sean McDermott did say this week that he's making progress.
Sal, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, earlier in the week, it was on Monday, I think, Sean McDermott was asked about basically, you know, trying to defend Lamar Jackson and or mimic him in practice with the scout team. I think maybe that was it about. And he said something to the effect of, yeah, maybe we'll just use 3 guys, you know, one on the middle and one guy in each end. So as it turns out, you tweeted this out, Ray-Ray McCloud is or was charged with mimicking Lamar Jackson this week, right?
Yeah, and, you know, Ray-Ray, you could try anybody you want. You can't beam Lamar Jackson. But as far as guys who, you know, have an opportunity and an ability to at least show some of the athleticism and things like that, you know, Ray-Ray is a very, very good athlete. He is a guy that ran for close to 6,000 yards as a running back in high school in Tampa, 58 touchdowns he ran for. And he also told me he ran a similar offense in high school. Now, he was a running back in high school, but he did run in a similar offense. So, you know, he understands, you know, the concepts of what they're trying to do. And then a couple of the defenders said that they were actually pretty impressed with how well he threw the ball as well when he had to. So it was funny. I said to Jerry Hughes, I said, did you know that Ray-Ray ran for over 5,000 yards in high school? He said, no, that's crazy. And I told that to Ray-Ray, and he looked at me and goes, well, it's actually almost 6,000. So he's pretty proud of, you know, what he did. So, yeah, he's the guy that they're using. And, you know, it's not uncommon. Every team's going to try and do something to use somebody for a scout team look to give the best look possible. And whether that's a running back or quarterback or receiver, you do whatever you can. In this case, it's Lamar Jackson, and that's always tough to simulate.
We brought up linebackers with you earlier this week in the discussion, I think, about Lamar Jackson at the time. But I wanted to add another layer to the linebackers' jobs on Sunday, because I think with guys like Edmonds and Milano, first off, it's everything involved with Lamar Jackson and being disciplined and how you approach him with his reads, his runs, his zone reads, all that stuff. But also coverage responsibilities, because Baltimore really loves using their tight ends in the passing game. There's a ton on the table for Edmonds and Milano in this game.
There is, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on them. I think that, you know, what helps a little bit is, you know, the wide receivers aren't world beaters necessarily.
Mm-hmm, right.
They don't use them as much as they do the other guys. So I think that your safeties can at least kind of maybe concentrate a little bit more on that, right? You can help a little bit out. Your safeties can become part of more of, you know, helping to defend against the tight ends as much, because they're, you know, Hollywood Brown, obviously, he's got a lot of the speed. I don't know what they're going to do with Tre'Davious White, if he's going to be on him or not. But, you know, at least I think that it allows your safeties to maybe concentrate a little bit more on helping out in the tight ends, allowing the linebackers to, you know, concentrate a little bit more on Lamar Jackson and the run, if you will. But you're right, that is the challenge of the Baltimore Ravens, is they have many different ways in which they can attack you, and they made a huge commitment to doing it this way from the very beginning. I remember in the offseason, kind of scratching my head going, boy, the Ravens, they're just loading up on tight ends and want to run the ball, I guess. They're just going to reinvent running the football. Well, here we are, and that's what they did. But those tight ends, they're very much a part of their passing game. They've done a very nice job with them.
They're so good, and I know – you know, I think you talked earlier in this week of like, what do the Bills do because of Lamar Jackson? Would you play maybe less man-to-man? Eric Wood pointed that out this week, too. Would you play less man-to-man because you don't want your backs to these guys? But their tight ends are very good at getting open in the zone. And not just Andrews, right? It's Hurst and it's Boyle. They can find open spots. They sit in the zone, and that's a huge part of their passing game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, the Ravens are a very unique team, as Sean McDermott put it. You just don't see this in the NFL anymore, what they're doing. The NFL has become more of a passing league, obviously. This is a team that loves to run, but at the same time, you cannot dismiss their passing game. And Lamar Jackson is second in the NFL. At least he was until last night. He probably still is, but second in the NFL behind only Russell Wilson in touchdown passes this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to respect that as well. And when you look at their overall statistics and, you know, how he's distributing the ball, I mean, their tight end, Mark Andrews, is their leading receiver. 53 catches, 693 yards. Nick Boyle is number three on that list. 25 catches, 281 yards. You know, like I said, Marquise Brown, he has over 500 yards, 36 catches. That's nice, but that's their leading receiver. And then it's Willie Snead with only 24 catches. So it's not like, you know, by the way, Hayden Hurst is now, right, you know, in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down the list. So it's crazy. Mark Ingram's on there. They throw to everybody, whether that's out of the backfield or, you know, a tight end. You know, they're going to use everybody. But I do think that maybe the safeties come in a little bit more at play here. I wouldn't be surprised to see the big Bills play a little big nickel this week, a little more big nickel, I should say. I think that's might be how you have to do this because, as you're pointing out with the tight ends, and then you have the running game as well, you know, since they're not a team that relies so heavily on wide receivers compared to so many teams, maybe you put a guy like Saran Neal on the field to be your big nickel. Therefore, you have somebody both against the end and against the run.
I want to get to Shaq for a second, too. You wanted to get
You're
to
fine. I want to talk about the game plan for the offense.
Yeah, I want to get one last thing on the defense before we get over to the offense.
I've got to put up a Twitter poll about this, too.
The last thing about defense before we switch over was Shaq, and he is having his best season as a Bill. What do you attribute it to?
Boy, I think Shaq has really kind of learned how to really be a professional in a lot of ways. And I'm not saying he didn't know when he came in. There's a big difference between playing for Rex Ryan than there is for Sean McDermott, first of all. You know, as we know, he's one of the only guys, he's really the only guy that regime drafted that he's still here. You know, the other, Lorenzo Alexander's still here. They brought him as a free agent when Rex was here, and I think Reed Ferguson's the only other one, and he was on the practice squad. So Shaq's really the only one that kind of came in under that regime and taught and learned and now had to make the transition to this regime, which is far, far different. And he came in with all the accolades, first-round pick. And I think he's had to learn how to fit in to be on this particular defense, be his 111th, do everything it takes off the field, film study, those kinds of things. And you see it. You know, it's more attention to detail, more attention to, you know, what your role is in the defense and making sure that, you know, if you do your job, everybody else does. And I know those things sound like a coach, like Sean McDermott would talk, or cliche, but I do think that that attributes to it. And because he probably, because they are very good at, and he has taken ownership of treating his body the right way and making sure that he's in shape to do everything he's supposed to do, nutrition, weightlifting, all that kind of stuff, you can see that, you can see it. Go. In fact, I was watching something the other day, I can't remember what it was, and it was Shaq Lawson. In fact, I went back and watched a game. I don't remember which game it was. It was Shaq's rookie year. And I looked and I said, boy, he's changed. Like, his body has changed compared to then and now. And I think a lot of that is just what we're talking about, Howard. He's kind of taken ownership of his own career. He's also in a contract year, and he knows that if he puts up numbers, he's going to get paid. And, you know, we could say whatever you want about guys and say, oh, they only play in contract years. I think he's gotten better every year. But sure, that matters to him. The guy wants to get paid next year, whether that's here or somewhere else. You know, he's trying to do whatever he can to make sure that he does everything right and puts up numbers every week.
So on the offensive game plan, so I put up a Twitter poll about this. Anytime you play an offense that is the best in the league, right, 37% of their drives go into the end zone. That is number one, and that's a big one. You might say, well, you got to keep that team off the field. That's the goal, right? Keep Brady off the field. Keep Lamar. Keep the Baltimore offense off the field.
It's the old Peyton Manning approach.
Right, yeah. Let's limit the number of possessions in this game. Each team will only get six. We'll play some clock. We'll work everything. The problem is the Bills have been running up tempo, and it's working really well. So I think one of the first questions they have to ask themselves is, all right, do we go up-tempo, or are we a little bit afraid of that? Because if we give them 10 possessions, they're going to get in the end zone on 37% of the time, whatever that is. So do you run tempo, or do you slow the game down, knowing it's going to be windy, knowing that they run it, you run it? You approach each opponent differently, and that's not just from a schematic standpoint, but maybe from a points standpoint. You know, it's about how many points is it going to take to beat this team? How do I make it so I have more points than this team does? Would you run up tempo, or would you slow it down?
Well, it's a great question, and it's one that I tweeted about in a different way. Same thing you're saying, and I'm going to mesh it with this too, Jeremy. And something I've thought about a lot because I don't know. The other part of that is they've been very successful in 11 personnel. And the part of the reason they can go up-tempo is because they are playing 11 personnel. And they have those wide receivers out there, and they're basically matching up and keeping another team's nickel packages on the field and dime packages. In this particular case, excuse me, the Ravens, they are very good in those sub-packages. They are a team that probably does not want to play in their base defense as much. So the Bills, to me, might want to go away from 11 personnel, bring more tight ends in the field. And now you think about, okay, if you're doing that, are you going as up-tempo? You can still do it. You can do it with tight ends on the field. Of course you can. But, you know, I think that this is all part of it. The part of the everything they're doing is 11 personnel, up-tempo. But now you have a team where you might want to, A, slow it down because of what you said, which is the clock and, you know, making sure that you grind it out a little bit, keep Lamar Jackson off the field, and you're changing up your personnel. I don't know the chess match here, and it might be. And the other thing is, I think Josh Allen is much more comfortable in that 11 personnel. I think he personally, you know, fits better. He likes it better. He plays better when they go three wide receivers, one tight end, one running back. That's 11 personnel for all the listeners out there. One running back, one tight end is 11. So I think you have to also think about that. But you got to do what's best for the team. You got to do what's best to win the game. Maybe you see them go away from 11 personnel, but still play a little more up tempo. I don't know though. It's a great question, and I think that's part of the chess match. But I do think the Bills need to try and keep the Ravens more in base personnel because the Ravens are a better football team when they go with more defensive backs. Those defensive backs are fast. They're aggressive. They're going to get after you. And I think the Bills will try to, just like the Niners. What the Niners did, the Niners ran a lot of outside zone. They did it with double tight ends on the field sometimes. They kept the Ravens in base personnel, so their linebackers had to be on the field. And those linebackers, they weren't as good to getting out and getting on the edge and stopping them. And I think the Bills need to try and keep them in those packages and situations, which goes to your point of, okay, well, then if you're running up tempo, you might do it out of a lot of sets where they're going to have to use their DBs, and you don't want them to do that.
Yeah. Well, and the follow-up question is, Ian tweets in, you know, can you do both? Can you hurry up and wait? What you do is you run no huddle, but every single play, we're just going to stand around for 15 seconds.
Which you could, which they do, so actually. I mean, they don't snap it at 20. They snap it at like 10.
Well, the key is this. You have to remember, the rule is if you change personnel.
Oh, you got to give them some. Yeah,
right. The defense has to be able to change.
Yeah.
So it's you're right. It's not part of the reason they run the up-tempo and the no-huddle is why? Because they're trying to keep the defense in the same personnel.
No,
so it's more about that than anything. You can do it. But if you change personnel, it doesn't matter because you're going to have to give them a chance to change anyway. And I think that's where you have to try and find the right mesh, which is you can do it, but you got to keep the same guys in the field, which is fine.
Right.
You want to do that. If it's working, then stay that way.
Right. You just don't huddle. You get to the line for the next play. You just stand around for 20 seconds.
Right. So you're still using clock.
You're still using – it's a no-huddle clock.
Right.
That's right.
A no-huddle slowdown.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
See how it works.
You know, it's a lot. In a lot of ways, it's kind of like a 4-minute offense when an up-tempo no-huddle team has a lead. It's the same thing. They kind of do that too. Like you're doing that in some ways. You know, the Bills huddled in Dallas, but you're doing that in some ways. But you're not really snapping the ball until there's only a little bit left in the clock because you're trying to kill it because you have the lead. In this case, it's not because you have the lead. It's because you just want to take as much time off as possible. I also, what you brought up is right. The wind. Supposed to be 25, maybe 30 mile an hour gusts. And, you know, I mean, I think that's going to play into the game plan here. We may see two teams that just want to keep running the ball at each other all day and, you know, see which one is better at it.
803-0550 to join us. Sal with us on our Wester hotline on Football Friday. Whoop, okay. The caller, I don't think I disconnected him. We had a caller dropped off as I went to it. They wanted to know if this is the game where Josh Allen passes for 300 yards. And I'll tie that into how much pressure is on the offense because they might have to outscore Baltimore on Sunday.
Well, considering what I just said about the wind, I mean, it's going to be tough to throw in this wind anyway. You know, we've seen games like this, and, you know, it's not going to be like goalpost sideways, but it's going to be pretty gusty. It's going to be pretty tough. And I know Josh can, you know, you drafted him because he has the arm to fight through that and drive the ball through the wind. But I do think it's going to play into the game plan a little bit. I think we saw that against Philly, and, you know, how teams, both the Bills and the Eagles, kind of played with the wind, if it was for them or against them, and how much they threw the ball. But look, that is not how to beat the Ravens. As I just said a little while ago, the Ravens are a team that they want to put their DBs on the field against you. You know, the way to beat the Ravens is to run the football, and they're not a really stout run defense as far as statistically is concerned. They're much better. I'm looking right now. Let's see. Well, 20. Okay, there is 22 yards.
It's the yards per carry.
22 yards. I'm sorry, 22nd in yards per play. If you look at their yards per game, they're only giving up 95. But guys, I looked. They have the fewest amount of rushing attempts against them in the league. You know why? Because they're always beating teams, and teams have to throw on them.
They're winning.
Yeah.
That's right. So they're allowing 4.54 yards per carry, which is 22nd in the league. They're pretty good against the pass. Their numbers statistically are a little middle of the pack to above that. But if you watch the San Francisco 49ers game, that's the way you have to attack them. Run the football. I think the game plan for the Bills is to, if Josh Allen has to throw for 300 yards, I think that's probably bad. That means they're trying to catch up. That means they're probably down. If the Bills are keeping the ball on the ground and running and not having to rely on Josh Allen throwing, I think that's more the recipe for success here.
The good news is, if it is running the ball, and specifically to the edges, because like the book on the Ravens is right, they're stout inside, but their edge run defense, their outside linebacker is not so good.
That's right.
You have Devin Singletary, who would be very effective at that. You have Josh, who can get out there, and you even have Isaiah McKenzie or Robert Foster or whatever on jet sweeps to get to the edge.
Yeah, it's really more outside zone is where they got beat. It's not like sweeps and jet sweeps and stuff like that. You know, they have corners who are going to be aggressive and tackle. It's really more about outside zone and blocking. And more of it is because their linebackers are also aggressive. They will come up. And if they step up and, you know, maybe play action could be a way this week too. You know, their linebackers are aggressive. They're going to come up. They're going to step up. And then if you can get them caught in the wash a little bit in the outside zone plays and things like that, which, by the way, the Bills are good at. The Bills are good at blocking that. Devin Singletary is great as far as vision. So it's right on the edge, but, you know, it doesn't mean toss sweep, get to the sideline. It doesn't mean running jet sweeps all the time. It really means getting off tackle, running outside zone, having those offensive linemen block on the edge as the linebackers try to get through there, because last week they struggled with that.
With blocking an offensive line, how can you talk a little bit about the development of the line, which has included Feliciano coming in for Morse there briefly, but overall, how do you feel that the overhauled offensive line has come on in these last few games?
Well, look, I think that one of the things that's happened is they've had to kind of mix and match a little bit, and guys are getting, like, John Feliciano had to play center that one game when Mitch Morse went out, and then Spencer Long had to go in, and, you know, because these guys had to do that in preseason a little bit because Mitch Morse was out, it really helped them. And Feliciano is a guy that obviously has played center and guard, and Spencer Long is a guy that's played center and guard, and they will all tell you that it helps them because of communication, because of calls. But here's the other thing, they will tell you too, Josh Allen calls a lot of the, you know, he makes a lot of the calls out there. He's helping them, he's identifying coverages. The Bills give him a lot of freedom, and those guys will tell you, like, he's, there might be a play, and Josh has to change it. He has to change protection, so he's helping out. Now, listen, Cody Ford has had to play right tackle, and there are times if you isolate on Cody Ford, you're like, ooh, you know, he got beat on that play. But he's held his own enough. I don't think he's been great at right tackle, but he's held his own enough when he's one-on-one. They've given him some help once in a while. But I think Josh Allen's helped him too. When Allen has been back there throwing, he's done a nice job of manipulating the pocket and, you know, getting away. So I think Ty Insecki, when he comes back, he still needs to play right tackle as much as possible. But Cody Ford, he's done an adequate job. He's been there. He's kind of, you know, kept Josh as clean as possible. But I also think that he has room for improvement there.
The other guy I want to ask you about before I let you go is Robert Foster, who, you know, we're seeing a little more, Sal, from him the last couple games. As we get into these final four games, would you anticipate more touches or a greater role for Foster, since we kind of thought we were going to see that in September and it really hadn't materialized until these last couple games in a smaller role?
I think I do, but it's really up to Robert Foster, I guess, and how, you know, he continues on. Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll originally said on Monday, when I asked about the uptick in snap counts for Robert Foster, he said, you know, he had a really good week of practice, and they're going to go through practice this week, and they'll see, you know, how they want to play it. So I think what's happening is they're competing at practice. They're competing. Robert Foster, Isaiah McKenzie, and last week they were about 50-50 as far as snap counts, and I think they just feel that, you know, both guys did everything they're supposed to at practice. They look good, and Sean McDermott said he's playing fast. He's playing faster now. And that can be attributed to a lot of things. And maybe it's because maybe he's more comfortable in the offense and what they're asking him to do. And maybe he wasn't earlier in the year. Now he's playing a little bit faster because he's seeing things and thinking a little bit faster through everything. He also is good when he gets the ball in his hands. And they've, I think, kind of figured out a little bit here, instead of having him just go down the field and throwing it to him, you know, get him the ball maybe in short area spaces, and then he can make some things happen. You know, so if they want to go that way. So I'm interested to see how they continue on with Robert Foster, but it's a good sign that he's starting to get more involved in the offense, and he's starting to get the football in his hands.
If the Bills win this game on Monday, what are you going to be, well, Sunday night, or Monday morning when you're in for the extra point show, or when you're on with us, what are you going to be thinking if they win this game?
Who they're playing in the first round.
If they're playing in the first round. You might be thinking about if they're playing in the first round.
Yeah, I know, right?
I was going to ask if you're looking at Miami hotels, you know, for the Super Bowl. I mean, you know,
no, not going to be doing that. If they won this game on Sunday, I think my attention immediately focuses to New England, Kansas City. First of all, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the first thing that happens. And I think the answer to your question, Howard, is tell me what New England did.
Yeah,
because suddenly, if New England loses, I am thinking about the division.
Right.
I am thinking about the division because look, the Bills are a better team than the Pittsburgh Steelers. But it is a tough task to go to Pittsburgh. We talk about how the Bills on prime time, they haven't had these games, and they haven't won in, you know, Sunday night football. The last time was when they got blown out. Go check the Pittsburgh Steelers prime time at home. They've lost like three times in the past 10 years or something, and they play a lot of games. And generally, and only one of them was by more than a field goal, I think. They are tough. So my attention would be immediately towards what did New England do? How does the division look? And then thinking about that game in Pittsburgh and how big it is and what it means to each team. And then Pittsburgh's game Sunday is big, too. You know, they're going to Arizona.
Yeah.
If Pittsburgh wins that game and the Bills lose, suddenly this game is basically for flip-flopping in a spot in the conference. But if Pittsburgh goes to Arizona and loses, regardless of what the Bills do, they'll still have a two-game lead on them. So there's so much at play in that 4 o'clock window for the Bills as it relates to next week and going forward.
Yeah, playoff leverage is a cool thing I like to look at. And the Bills don't have a ton of playoff leverage for this game, but all the teams around them do. The Steelers' playoff leverage is 32%. Basically, their chance
is like the highest, isn't it?
The highest this week is Tennessee. Tennessee's is 36%.
It's a big game against the Raiders.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's 32. The Raiders is 22. And what playoff leverage means is just if you lose, you're X percent likely to make the playoffs, and if you win, you're X percent likely. You know, the Bills-Denver game was a big swing for them. And this one here, it's only about 5%. It kind of gets them to the finish line. Their next win basically gets them to the finish line. You know, who the win is over is different. If it's Pittsburgh, that will pretty much do the job. If it's the Jets, that would pretty much, you know. So, but yeah, the teams around them, it's a good weekend to watch football for sure.
If you go to New York Times playoff machine, Jer, and you put one win in, it doesn't matter which one, and all the rest are losses. You have the Bills going 1-3 down the stretch. I think it still has them at 99% or something.
Yep.
They just, like, 10 wins is going to do it. That's what it looks like. Unless really crazy things happen, I think 10 wins is going to do it no matter where that 10th win comes, which is what you just said. But it's interesting watching that play out and seeing, you know, the other teams, because here's the thing that I think I always want to remind everybody. Yes, you have teams that can catch the Bills, but two teams need to catch the Bills. They're in the fifth spot, and Tennessee plays Houston twice, and then the Raiders play Tennessee, and there's all these teams are playing each other, so two teams need to catch them, and they're all playing each other anyway, a lot of these teams, so they're just in a really good position, and I think that's right. I think that you get to one win. No matter which one it is, you're pretty much there, and from there, you're basically playing for seeding.
All right, sir. Enjoy the game Sunday, and we will talk about it with you Monday morning.
Okay, guys.
Thank you, Sal.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.